All right. Good morning, everybody. It is, we have Andy Schuckman on the show again today, and we're going to catch up. It's been a little while since we chatted last, and the world is no less crazy or dire, and thought it might be a good time just to touch base and see how things are going. So how are you doing today, Andy? What do you think is going to happen this week?
Good to be back, brother. Yeah, you know, it is crazy, and interesting, right? And that's a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. I always think about the
little
analogy my father gave me about life, and you can apply it in so many respects, including where we are in the cycle. He said, you know, Andy, life's like a roll of toilet paper. When you're young, you don't notice it's spinning, right? You got a fresh roll of toilet paper, you don't notice the passage of time. But as you get older and things start to move faster, you notice the roll spinning faster and faster and faster. You're aware of the cardboard at the end of the roll. I think that's emblematic not only of life, Craig, but also of where we are in the cycle. Things are spinning much faster. You can see the cardboard. To me, the cardboard is November. What happens in November, regardless of who wins? What happens? Do we have a revolution? Or do we have a, you know, we have half of the country upset either way. And I left Minnesota largely due to Governor Walz's left of left policies. I don't think people understand just how important this election is. And it's not even a red versus blue statement. To me, it's an erosion of privacies. It is creeping towards a socialist agenda where it's all about equality rather than equal opportunity. And that's a bad place to go. And I think we're heading in that direction unless we see a change in administration. So, yeah, I think we're going to see things moving much, much faster over the next few weeks and months. And then, of course, the biggest BRICS meeting in October. There's so many pivotal points between now and then. So it's good to be back. Good to chat about things. And again, thanks for having me.
Oh, no, thanks for being back on. Well, I'm definitely a BRICS fan, I guess you would say. You know, I think that I call the BRICS the Silk Road 2.0. is what it really is. And I think that it's cyclical. And so it's probably time for, you know, I'm of course very love my country, very patriotic, but I get a feeling that it might just be cyclical and it might be time that the Western Empire declines a little bit and the Eastern one does a bit better. I think it might just be cyclical due to history. You can look at, like, you know, longer weather cycles and such like that, where growing regions change. But I think that, do you think that people in America take the BRICS rising seriously enough? Because I feel that a lot of Americans just sort of poo-poo it. They go, oh, whatever, you know.
Well, not only that, Craig. I mean, you know, think of all the guys you've been buddies with your whole life. Go back to elementary school with the guys you still talk to. 8 out of 10 of them wouldn't even know what the BRICS are. What are you talking? BRICS are outside on the, you know, on the front of my house. What are you talking about, BRICS? And so I think that the media in the West doesn't just do a poor job of explaining, they do no job. And, you know, think of how much time, Craig, that you need to spend researching and digging outside the mainstream to get your knowledge base. Most people don't do that any longer. It, you know, used to be when you and I were kids that, you know, one parent could go to work and the other one could stay home with the kids and you could have, you know, a middle-class lifestyle. Now that doesn't play out. Now both parents are working their ass off. They come home, they get their kids out of daycare. They come home, they rush to make dinner. If they're lucky, they have a glass of wine and sit around and talk before they pass out. They don't have time to open up the computer to start digging and looking for alternative medium. Yes, the people who understand the BRICS dismiss it due to recency bias and normalcy bias, but this is a massive mistake. The United States is, you know, certainly you could argue it was the petrodollar that has kept us the world reserve since 1973. The exorbitant privilege that is the world reserve has been dismissed, disrespected, and forsaken in many respects. And now we are a system really largely based on confidence and trust. And we've squandered that as well by weaponizing the dollar. What is happening with the BRICS is for real. It is legitimate. It represents already as it is with the 10 countries before the 59 that have formally applied, Craig, to join. It represents a larger portion of human population, a larger swath of global GDP, the majority of all the production of the global commodities, the majority of the shipping and trade routes around the world, three of the four largest nuclear arsenals on the planet. I mean, I keep going on and on and on. And when you talk about legitimacy, it is very legitimate. They are very legitimate, and they do things the right way. It's not a shotgun deal either. This is going on 18 years that they've been doing this. So, yeah, I think for most people, they'll be blindsided by it. I always like the statement, you can't get out of the way of what you don't see coming. You'll see it coming. The people who you talk to, your friends and your listeners, well, they see it coming. But most people in America have no idea what is coming and therefore can't get out of the way of it. They can't prepare for it because they are blinded by and paralyzed by recency and normalcy bias. Everything will work out. Everything always does. And we have a birthright of living better than our parents and our grandparents did. These things are all beginning to change.
Yeah, especially with the weaponization of the dollar. And I think that a lot started to change in this world when, what was it, 71, when Nixon was around, we took the dollar off the gold standard. And if I look at, I was actually looking at old Hot Rod magazines recently. I was looking at a like 1966 Hot Rod magazine. All you see, it says 67 on there, but it's 66. And all you see is articles that are hopeful about, how can we make things faster and better? How can we, you know, it's just nothing really, but this is really cool. This is our hobby. This is fun. But then you go to 1973 Hot Rod Magazine, and all you see is editorials and commentary on we're losing our freedoms. And so within about a decade, between like 66 and like 73, there was an incredible change. And I feel like, that direction we began to change in the 70s is where we're headed now. It's almost like that's when the trend started. And now so many things that people were talking about, just like in Hot Rod magazines back in the day, that when we lost old school points, that would be the end of our freedom. Like one day, you know, we won't be able to open our hood and we won't own our car, you know. And so these things are, you know, sadly closer than, well, the Hot Rodders of the 70s were really kind of on the mark. And you look at Harley Davidson, if you're familiar with that one, where they got a globalist woke CEO in the company, and he's just decided to put an end to the company, you know, just drive it into the ground and piss off the customers, not sell products anybody can afford. And so, because he just believes that petrol, you know, he's a net zero guy as far as, you know, and so he feels that, well, motorcycles use gas, so we better just get rid of them. So I'll buy this company and I'll destroy it, or I'll be CEO and I'll destroy it. So do you think we're fighting on many fronts? I mean, economically, but also even culturally, like Harleys represent America, you know, gaudiness, power. And so that's how the globalists sneak in. They go, we'll get a CEO in there that'll just look like he's trying to do something good, but ultimately it'll be the end of Harley.
And can you imagine a Harley, an electric Harley Davidson? You start it up, and is your bike running?
Yeah,
you know, I got a buddy who lives down the street from me, and you know, he starts his Harley, and you can hear it as he's driving out of the community and all the way down the street. I had a motorcycle all through high school and part of college. My dad fell on it. My mom looked at me and said, "You ever get another motorcycle again, you're not my son." So I have yet to get another one. I've always wanted to get another Harley, but I mean, yeah, I saw that, and I see they're pivoting from where they are right now because they're losing so much in the way of market share. But a country that would prioritize lifestyle over merit is a country that has lost its bearings. And you know, a lot of what I've been talking about lately, Craig, is it too stupid to be stupid? Are the changes that we continue to see planned? Or, I mean, is this a plan, or is it just that we're just stupid? I mean, the things that we have done, you know, I was born in 1970, and in the era that I grew up, you respected, first and foremost, you respected authority. It didn't mean you couldn't challenge it respectfully, But you said yes, sir, yes, ma'am, to a police officer, to the principal. You opened the door for a woman. You knew who a girl was. You knew who a boy was. I left Minnesota because of a lot of the things that they've done. Governor Walz put tampon dispensers in boys' bathrooms throughout every high school in Minnesota, just in case one girl who identifies as a boy is in the bathroom and has her period, or his period, I guess you could say, and feels discriminated against. How disrespectful is that to the large tax base? I grew up in a home where my parents were in essence hippies. I was a jock. I learned to respect all lifestyles, and you can be my buddy. Doesn't mean I'm not going to go and party with you that way, but I'll hang with you and we can be buddies. And but my point of it is that we've gone from a world of respect and mutual respect to one of having to acquiesce and have to kowtow to these fringe ideas. And instead of letting people be who they are and just leave it as is, we now have to bow down and change the fabric of the country. And I think that's partly by design. And when you look at lawlessness, when you look at people being able to rob stores for $900 and not be prosecuted, not even be arrested. When you look at the elections and the judicial system, when you look at the open borders, all of these things are not lost on the rest of the world. And then you add on to it $1 trillion of debt every 100 days. People don't understand how big that is. You know, I can say $100,000 a second. That's how much debt we're creating. People understand that. But when I say $1 trillion, it just flows, you know, off the tongue and one ear and out the other. A trillion seconds ago was 31,688 years ago. The numbers are becoming too big to ever fix. So when you talk about destruction of the currency, destruction of our way of life, of respect, of things like authority, of religion, of all of the things that made this country great, the nuclear family, it's not lost on the rest of the world. And that's here at home. That's one piece of the puzzle. And then, of course, the weaponizing of the dollar. We're right now, in fact, I just wrote something down. Let me see if I can find it here, because I couldn't even believe it when I saw this. I think I wrote it down. Let me just see real
quick. Yeah, so it's 100K a second or a minute?
A second.
A second.
$6 million per minute.
Oh, God, $6 million a minute. Oh, my God, that's true. Okay.
So I don't know if I'm going to be able to find this, but it was just blew me away that we are, the West is sanctioning, if I'm not mistaken, 60% of all of the underdeveloped countries. In some respect, they're being sanctioned. Yeah, I don't know where I put it, but nonetheless, the point of it is that we go around the world and we sanction. And you know, like, for example, Janet Yellen says to CNN, look, we're okay with Xi and Putin being buddies and BRICS. You know, well, thank you, Madam Secretary. That's very nice of you. But if Xi gives one penny to Putin's war machine, we will sanction their banks, their companies in Beijing itself. Never mind the fact that we've given $160 billion to the Ukraine with no congressional oversight and Stinger missiles and F-16s, and we just agreed to give them a whole bunch more money. Let's see. How much money did we just vote to give them? Let's see here. I think I have it. And all sorts of military assistance. It's ridiculous. We just decided to, again, let's see if I have it here as well. I don't know if I do. No, I don't. But I know that we just decided to give them a whole bunch, another bunch of billions of dollars, mostly in the form of weapons. So we steal $5 billion of Russian assets, and that's
yes,
stealing. It's not sanctioning; it's stealing. We steal their $5 billion in treasuries, and worse than that, we give it to the military-industrial complex in the form of high-tech weapons to give to the country in their midst of a war against. You put all of that weaponizing of the dollar, this hypocritical stance, the literally eviscerating of the value of the dollar through money creation, on top of what we've done at home, the lawlessness, the elections, the judicial system, the open borders, all of this stuff. And you have to ask yourself, is it too stupid to be stupid? Or could this indeed be planned? Well, planned for what, people would say? You know, if you Google what is the largest asset of the U.S. government, you'll find a it's nauseating.
Yeah.
More than anything that I could ever say, it's it's student debt of $1.6 trillion is the 45% of largest asset, 45% of all the assets the U.S. government is student debt. That's the land of the free, the home of the brave. And when you talk about a country that is $35 trillion in debt, like we are, that doesn't even include Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and government military pensions. Medicare Part B is $99 trillion underfunded. Part D, $22 trillion, and Social Security, $77 trillion. We're broke. We're at 125% debt to GDP. Back in the day, you cross 100% debt to GDP, you're a banana republic, but at least you have fair elections and a fair judicial system. Wait a second. Maybe we don't. Are we a banana republic? And that's the kind of stuff that's not lost on the rest of the world. So why would we do it? Well, we're broke, we're insolvent, we've created too much debt, we'll never pay it off. And so the conventional wisdom says you inflate or you default. That's option A, that's option B. How about option C? Find the villain, Xi Jinping and Putin, those bastards did it. So we sign an executive order to go green, we weaponize the dollar, and we let the country go to shit. And then people say, well, I don't want to hold dollar, so let's form a union that will be one backed upon commodities and trust and transparency. And that's what we see happening in a growing fashion, a really growing legitimate fashion in every way: GDP, human population, military might, commodity production, and refining. Last year, China refined 100% of the rare earth metals. Now, how well did we think about this green thing? They produced, the Eurasian continent produced 85% of all the rare earths in China, refined 100%. Have we really thought this green agenda out very well? I don't think so. And so when you talk about every single metric, how hard would it be for the rest of the world to dump dollars? And that's really the point, is that most people here in the States, Craig, they don't get what makes the dollar the reserve currency. You went back to 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window. Well, from the end of World War II to 71, our dollar was as good as gold. And countries could exchange their dollars back to the U.S. for gold at a fixed rate of 35 bucks an ounce. When Nixon closed the gold window in 71, right in between those hot rod magazines, it was 3 years later that Kissinger went to Saudi Arabia and told the Saudis, you value oil globally in dollars through OPEC and recycle any extra in treasuries and we'll protect you forever. Well, that was 50 years ago, last month, 2 months ago, and the Saudis decided to not re-up that exclusivity deal. We'll still take dollars, they said, but not just dollars. And that's the beginning of the end of the U.S. dollar and its hegemony. Now, we still have the supremacy, but that supremacy is waning. It used to be 70 or 80% of all transactions in dollars. It's down to just above 50 and 60-something percent. And if every country in the world doesn't need to own dollars anymore, as they have for the last 50 years, creating a synthetic demand for the dollar because you have to have it to buy oil. Well, if you don't need it to buy oil anymore, you start to see a loss of demand for the dollar. And as that happens, you begin to see the dollar weaken and weaken and weaken and weaken, which is probably part of what they really want, because if you devalue the dollar, it makes paying off the debt easier. But if all of a sudden everyone dumped dollars at once, there's something called Operation Sandman. People should Google it. And if that were to happen, they call it the night of the switch, where all these 100-plus countries have decided in concert to dump dollars and treasuries all at once after they've de-dollarized enough and replaced it with gold, which, by the way, has doubled the performance of the 10-year treasury since 2000 with no counterparty risk. And if that were to happen and everyone dumped dollars, the byproduct of that massive rush of inflation coming across the globe hitting our shores is interest rates spiking to the moon to compensate for the loss of purchasing power. Has to happen. That's not driven by Powell and the Fed, but by the market. And when that happens, interest rates spike to the moon. Everything in this country that makes people feel wealthy, stocks, bonds, real estate, the banks that are over-leveraged and undercapitalized, the insurance companies that are loaded 90% in treasuries, they all collapse. And it was those sons of bitches who did it to us. That's option three. Reset the system, find a villain. We should talk about option four, which I really didn't see coming until this year. There's more and more and more people in high places talking about a revaluing of the gold market. We'll get to that, but I'll shut up and let you we'll come back to that.
No, I like that. Well, Operation Salmon is definitely something people should, even if what you said is all I know about it, that it's a possibility, it is something to think about, because It's very possible. And of course, they could do it quickly. But even if they do it slowly, which they kind of are, there's like Operation Sandman overnight, Operation Sandman, that's kind of already in effect. It's just not quite overnight, but it's still happening. I think in the end, you get the same effect.
That's logarithmic decay. That's my favorite phrase. Little by little by little, then all at once. It's going over the fall. So the little by little is what you're talking about, and that is happening. And the Operation Sandman, the switch, well, that's all at once. And when do they pull that switch? I don't know. But people need to understand that the exorbitant privilege that we have for being the world reserve currency is one that we have disrespected in totality. And I can understand, as I'm sure people listening to this can understand, why the rest of the world would feel disrespected. And we've lived at a means and at a level much higher than the rest of the world, largely because the fact that we can just print our money and continue to print our way to prosperity. Well, Zimbabwe and Weimar Republic, Germany, and other countries throughout history have proven that really doesn't work in the end. So, yeah, things will come full circle, and don't be surprised to see gold backing a new system, whether it be in the BRICS or in the West. But, yeah, I think your point is very astute about whether it happens a little bit or all at once. I think that is what will happen. It's like anything that starts out, like you spring a little bit of a leak in a hole, starts out as just a pinhole. And then as the pressure goes, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it just rips apart. Where are we in that cycle? Well, it's still a pinhole, but I can see it ripping apart on many levels.
Oh, yeah. And the weaponization of the dollar, I think that's a big one that people aren't always aware of, in that we have sanctioned the world to the point of it's like Idiocracy, the movie or something. It's so, like, when you watch Idiocracy, you know, if one goes back and watches it, people have always joked about it being a documentary and such like that. But if you watch that and then look at current day, it's sad how accurate it really has been. Just you have to look at it a bit, you know, multi-level, but we're there. When I look at our sanction makers, we're at that like Idiocracy level where weaponization of the dollar eventually kind of destroys the dollar as I look at it, because when you sanction China, Russia, you know, Cuba, eventually you sanction the whole world. I mean, the whole world eventually realizes that, like when we seized Russia's assets, I think that was a moment in history that we'll see in the history books. Maybe we're not seeing it today, but I think that's going to be a moment where we really see a change in the world, because that was a step too far. I mean, who is going to, what country, you know, and what company in any country is going to have their assets at risk? Because basically, pissing off America, you really can't help it at this point. America's mad at everybody if you do anything. And so any company that can get on the Shanghai Gold Exchange, that can, you know, trade in yuan or rubles, whatever, they're gonna do it. I don't see, and I'm watching it more and more, no country or company within a country with any sense is going to touch the dollar, because it's only a matter of time before we take it.
Well, I'm world being looks
cynical, but I think it's true.
In many respects, worse than everyone else that is being sanctioned. We invaded Iraq 20 years ago. We're still occupying their country. We've destroyed it. We've toppled the regime, put in a new one. They are not allowed to control their oil revenue. They made $90 billion in 2023. Asked us for $1 billion at the end of the year. We said, come back to us next year. It's a bad time. It's their money. And we're there 20 years later after supposedly going there under, you know, pretenses of weapons of mass destruction. Sorry, we didn't find any, but guess what? We're still here. And we're sanctioning 14 other banks for trading with Iranian banks to buy oil, or liquid natural gas, rather, to cool their homes. And, you know, so what has Iraq done? This is the way the world views us. They've kicked out, they're in the midst of kicking out Western coalition forces right now. They've formally applied to BRICS. They've made trading in dollars illegal. If you own a company and trade in dollars, you'll go to prison and your company will get taken. And as of January, about 7 months ago, 8 months ago, they got rid of all green bills out of the country. None, zero. So every bank got rid of them. And so when you talk about being hypocritical, if we were held to a higher standard, fine. But we are eviscerating our currency. We have all sorts of questions regarding what makes this country great, namely judicial system and electoral system, let alone the immigration. We're creating $100,000 in debt per second, or $1 trillion per 100 days, which took 200 years to do it, we're giving people accreditation by lifestyle over merit. I mean, everything is upside down. So I don't blame the world at all. And that's why I say, is it too stupid to be stupid? Could this be planned? And when you realize that the lead economic advisor to the U.S. government is a guy named Jared Bernstein, whose education, first and foremost, is a degree in music and a master's degree in social work. He practices what's called inclusionary economics. In other words, you know, it's all about equality rather than equal opportunity, you know. And if that's really the case, then, you know, why try? I mean, that's socialism. If everyone is equal, how about you are given equality under the system? You all have the same opportunity to make the best of yourself. And he or she who applies themselves the best in every way wins. And that's the whole system that creates greatness and creates competition and inspires confidence and respect. We are so far deviating from that, I can see why the rest of the world would pull back. And that's why I'm saying, was this intended? Because it's much easier to reset the system if those sons of bitches did it to us rather than falling on the sword for your idiocy in brain dead monetary policy and your massive amount of fiscal irresponsibility with fiscal policy on the government. And, you know, we're spending so much money for so much nonsense. It's just a joke. And it won't get better, you know, and at some point when there's nothing backing the system, but the confidence of the issuer, well, how much confidence do people really have in us any longer when they look at even the way our elections are run and the judicial system? And it's not even a question or a statement on Biden versus Trump. What it is, do you think people around the world would look at the United States and say unequivocally that their electoral system is fair and their judicial system is not two-tiered? How many people would say, nah, I don't think that's really the case? And so these are things that made this country great that have now been disrespected. There's something called the Cloward-Piven theory that I would suggest your listeners read immediately. Google it. It won't take you more than 5 minutes to read it. It speaks to a husband and wife professor in Columbia, at Columbia University in the 60s, who, by the way, Jared Bernstein, our lead economic advisor, went to. So did Obama. So did Madeleine Albright, Eric Holder, Bill Barr, the current Speaker of the House, not the current Speaker of the House, the current, what's his name? It's a guy's name that flies all around the world on our behalf. Forget his name. The guy that is a spokesman for the White House. He's, can't believe I can't think of his name. Well, anyways, it's Monday morning. I haven't had enough coffee yet. He went to Columbia. Also, all of, the whole premise of Cloward-Piven is to overwhelm the system, overwhelm the entitlement system, overwhelm the inner cities, create a serfdom of people that will only vote for the current or for the Democratic Party rather than the Republicans, who want to remove all of these handouts and giveaways. And it's really very scary. Read the Cloward-Piven theory and you will say, my God, this is exactly what they are doing. They're trying to overwhelm the system and create socialism, create universal basic income, and create people who will never, ever, ever again vote for anything but the administration that will do the handouts. It's an awfully scary thing to read, but you walk away from it saying, yeah, this is what's happening. And I do believe that if the current administration is able to retain power again, this country is really in for a very, I don't want to go as far as saying the country's done, but I will tell you in my heart, I'm scared for my kids, the world they're growing up in, if indeed this party retains the White House. I just think we're in trouble. And I don't even think Trump can fix the financial ills right now. But what he could do is establish law and order again and get back to the American ideals. And that's the first place we need to start and go from there. A system where it's about how hard you work and your merit, and not about equal equality. It's about equal opportunity. And that, I think, is something, along with law and order, is the first place to start. Getting our fiscal house in order will come next. But that, any way you look at it, there has to be a modicum of pain, because what the Fed has done in 2008, when the great financial crisis happened, the Fed's balance sheet was $800 billion. It was $9 trillion last year. It's lower now. They've been selling it off. But here we are again. We're going back to QE. we're going to lower rates again. We've given in because you raise rates to 5%, the banks start to collapse. Not a good thing. And we saw it happen in Japan. They raise rates and strengthen the yen. Global systems start to collapse. We saw it in the United Kingdom. They raise rates and the pension system starts to collapse. In every case, we back off and we start, or they back off, or we back off and start to go the other way again. Ease, lower rates, print money. All of this stuff is very bad, and we need a change, no question about it. But we need to start with our own house in terms of law and order and what made this country great. That's where the biggest deviation to me is. The rest of it, if people around the world were inspired by the United States for what it had to offer, and all the kids who grew up wanting to wear Levi's jeans and listen to rock and roll music and come experience freedom and opportunity, equal opportunity, if that was what the America was, I think we could probably, with our backs against the wall the way we have before, fix what's wrong with this country, fix our fiscal problems, stop spending so much. But instead, it just seems, along with spending more and more and more and more, weaponizing more and more and more and more, coercing instead of cooperating more and more and more, and then you let our country fall apart, we're in trouble, man. And that's why people need to get out and vote and hope that our vote counts this time and that we win this election and see a change. And it's not about Trump. It's not about Biden. It's that this, we need to go away from this path of what is in essence a socialistic agenda into one that is more about capitalism and opportunity and hard work, the things that made this country great.
Yeah. And like the election this time around, I'm not sensing a lot of enthusiasm out there. Like I do see the Trump rallies and they're neat because he goes out there and he talks to his base, but you know, whether he does those things or not yet to be seen, we'll have to see if he does. But I definitely didn't see a lot of enthusiasm with Vance that he's, you know, selected for VP. I think that was a massive mistake because just that was a huge turnoff. I just think he said too many things in the past that people don't like. And I keep wondering, like, hey, Trump, like, why didn't you select like Tulsi Gabbard? Whether you like her or not, there wouldn't even be an election. He'd just win. I think, you know, there were, it's like, he seems to have picked somebody as a VP that nobody heard of. And at least people that I know, he tends to have in general pissed them off with past statements. So I'm like, I sure wish Trump had picked Tulsi Gabbard or even say, hey, RFK, you know what? Why don't you be VP? I'm not even really crazy of him. I'm not really crazy about RFK, but still, you know, then again, maybe he'll do something like put RFK in as attorney general. Now, I'd like to see that. That would stir some crap up. So I'm hopeful, but I wish I could be a little bit more hopeful in the Trump machine at this time. Although I do like you've mentioned, he would, I think you heard you say this, that he would, you know, weaken the dollar and then keep the interest rates where they are. And that would be at least a initial, some gains the country could make a little bit. That might be a little bit stabilizing to the economy.
Yeah, it would be stabilizing the economy, but, you know, in essence, a weak dollar, excuse me, and low interest rates really mostly benefit the wealthy. Because the wealthy have assets. And that's what wealthy people have. It's not so much a massive bank account where they may have and may not have, but they have lots of assets. And in a weak dollar inflationary environment, assets go higher. That's the knock against devaluing the dollar. And we've even seen the Trump administration say that. We saw Vance say, well, maybe being the world reserve currency isn't the best policy. They both want a weak dollar. They both want low interest rates. That's what they keep talking about. And that's great. But the problem is, from where we start, it ends up ultimately just making things worse. And that's the problem. And that's why I say economically, I don't know how easy it will be with the current policies and the policies even Trump wants, because, you know, if that is really the case, we just go down the path of inflation again and money creation and austerity. And by keeping interest rates artificially low, you blow up asset prices again. So we may be too far down the hole in terms financially to really fix this without going through some pain. And we should have let the forest fire clear the
you know, the underbrush in 2008. Instead, we papered it over and made it much worse. And by suppressing interest rates all that time, the distortions in asset prices became ridiculous. And what is a house worth at 3% 30-year mortgage? What's it worth at 6 or 7%? How about 9 or 10? Ultimately, when you lower the interest rates and you push down the value of the dollar, ultimately, at some point, you have to ask yourself, who's going to buy our bonds at those rates? Who wants to buy the bonds of a country that continues to go deeper and deeper and deeper into debt? So you lower short-term interest rates. Ultimately, at some point, rates have to go higher to compensate for the inflation. And there is a buyer of our treasuries at a certain point. But, you know, I start to wonder who wants to buy the treasuries of a country that is devaluing their dollar, keeping interest rates artificially suppressed, and in essence, going down the same pathway that we always have. Yes, it may make it a little bit easier for a while, but yeah, it's just going to make the patient sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker until the end. We have to stop spending. We have to cut our spending. We have to rein things in. We have to go through a period of austerity. And I don't think there are any politicians, Trump included, who are willing to do that. And that's why ultimately a country or an institution like the BRICS, who is coming up from the ashes and talking about a commodity-backed system, one that is based on cooperation, probably has a far greater chance of succeeding than most people would ever acknowledge.
Yeah, and I think along with the pain and austerity, I think what might be happening in this cycle change, I think, is also America learning how to be part of the world. Because why would the countries want to buy our bonds? Well, you know, why should they, in a sense? You know, BRICS exists for a reason. And I think, you know, part of a great, you know, one of those reasons is, you look at, there's a great book, it's called like America's Hidden Cold War or The Hidden Cold War. I forget what it's called exactly. I'll link to it after the show. But it's really well written by two professors, and it gets into, and it's not a biased book. It's not like that. It gets into America's 70 regime changes from like 47 to 91, just during the Cold War. You know, 67 were covert. We learned about them after the fact. Now we know everything, but there was like a total of 70. And then, of course, that's only escalated, you know, since then. So it seems like we're also going to go through a stage of the world gets a little payback, because all those countries are pissed. Like, you know, they didn't appreciate it. They didn't all of a sudden start, you know, like loving America or something because we knocked their government over. It doesn't work that way.
That's just it. And you look at a country like China, and I'm not speaking to the way that human rights or anything, but
yes,
they go around the world like with their Belt Road Initiative, and they do it in a cooperative manner. Their group, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it's the largest regional financial and military organization in the world. And even in the words they choose, cooperation, the BRICS, the presidency rotates every year. There's not one central authority. It was in South Africa last year. It's in Russia this year. And I'm not sure where it goes next year, if it's India or China. But the point of it is that this is a situation where I think the world is tired of the Western hegemony. And it's not just the United States. It's 500 years, you know, of it, from all the Western countries and these countries that are now standing up against the hegemony, because they're coordinated, they're motivated, they're sophisticated, they've become wealthy rather than third world and industrialized, and it's real. So yeah, this is a situation that is very real, and I think it is something that will be a very big mistake for the West to underestimate its significance. And then there's gold, and it's worth mentioning,
yes,
talking about gold, I just wanted to read you one thing and then explain to you the gold revaluation account. So, we've seen the central banks of the past. Let me find, here it is right here. We've seen the central banks of the world buy more gold than at any time in central bank history over the last few years. And they're using the suppression of the Western paper market to run cover for it, where the LBMA and the COMEX will suppress the price of gold and silver in order to make the economy and the bond market seem stronger than it is. Well, the West is stupid in doing this because the sophisticated, motivated, coordinated BRICS countries are standing for delivery. Well, it's not just the BRICS countries that are doing so. Poland was the largest buyer of gold, I believe, last year, and they're right up there again this year. And it says the president of the National Bank of Poland, Adam Glapiński, recently revealed that the central bank would continue to buy gold and is aiming for the precious metals to make up 20% of its reserves. But I think it's interesting. He also came out and said, look, our holding of gold is a matter of financial security and stability. Gold will retain its value even when someone cuts off the power to the global financial system, destroying traditional assets based on electronic accounting records. Of course, we do not assume that this will happen, but as the saying goes, forewarned is always insured, and the central bank is required to be prepared even for the most unfavorable circumstances. That is why we see a special place for gold in our foreign exchange management process. So, you know, you got the head of the Polish National Bank saying something cryptic like that. Well, when the whole system breaks apart because it's all digitized, well, our gold helps us do that. Well, the head of the Dutch National Bank said something similar to that, basically said when the system collapses, gold will help us, you know, rise from the ashes, a new system. But he's also been talking about revaluing gold for the last year. He keeps talking about it. And gold is held in an account across every central bank balance sheet in something called the gold revaluation account. You can't even make that up. Why would they call it the gold revaluation account? That's what it's called. And so he says, look, why don't we just revalue gold to a much higher level and offset our liabilities with our gold holdings? And, you know, you can hear that, you know, President Roosevelt over my shoulder, that's what he did. He confiscated gold and devalued the dollar by 40%, making gold increase by 40%. It's happened before. But then you get Trump speaking a few weeks ago in Tennessee at the Bitcoin meeting.
Yeah.
And he says, we need to build a national strategic Bitcoin account, which probably isn't real good inspiring confidence for the dollar, but I digress. But what happened right after that was Senator Loomis from Wyoming gets up and says, I agree, I'm gonna create a bill, and here it is, and I think that we should fund this Bitcoin strategic account partially by revaluing the gold that the Fed holds for us. And every $4,000 increase in the price of gold would put $1 trillion free and clear in the Treasury General account. And Janet wouldn't even need congressional approval to do it. She would just tell Jerome, revalue the gold. Now, people think Bitcoin can go to a million. That's no problem. Why couldn't gold go to 120,000 an ounce?
Yeah.
If it did, our debt is now completely commensurate with our assets. And every central bank on the planet's been buying it. They all own it. Wouldn't it benefit everybody? That would be option four to me. The easiest option to avoid a tremendous amount of pain. It would be inflationary, but it wouldn't crater the markets. And even Trump's, what I would say would be his Federal Reserve nominee, chairman of the Fed, Judy Shelton, if he wins, is a gold standard advocate. And she said, the way that you inspire confidence to have people buy our treasuries is to have it redeemable in gold. 30-year treasuries redeemable in gold. So you put gold high enough, it'll never come back down. It will be pegged to a new system. And you're seeing the same thing in the BRICS, talking about their new unit token, which is 40% gold back, which in principle has already been agreed upon. And if they do roll it out in October over Project Enbridge, which is the cross-border payment system that the dollar is not compatible with, that Saudi Arabia just became a full participant with.
Yeah.
Gold is being remonetized across the globe. Gold is playing by a new set of rules. And I think people need to understand that. Most people aren't aware of it because the media doesn't portray it, but it's outpaced every asset on the planet except for Bitcoin over the past 25 years. It's up 9.9%. It's even outpaced the tech sector this year. So, you know, it's up over 20% this year and continues to march higher unabated and without any fanfare. It's not noticed. It's the tortoise, not the hare. The hare is the one that gets all the press, and the tortoise just keeps on marching along. It's doubled the performance of the 10-year treasury over 25 years. And the S&P 500 with dividends reinvested is slightly less than gold, which pays no interest over the past 25 years. So, yeah, I think that the countries that have been accumulating it slowly and methodically see gold as being part of a new system to inspire confidence in a system where confidence has been squandered and disrespected.
Yeah, and that's a way people can, you know, play to win. I think that's really important, is many people are looking for a strategy. You know, how can I play to win? And of course, you are, you know, you are Miles Franklin, you know, and it's a great place to buy your metals. I mean, I'm also a huge silver fan. I like them both, you know. One of the nice things about silver is psychologically it has a real value in that an ounce of silver is attainable for many people. They can start stacking ounces, you know, where ounces of gold are a little bit more difficult for most people, but you don't have to buy a whole gold coin at a time. There's fractions, there's smaller coins, but it does seem like a strategy to win, at least a way to hedge your bets, like where you really can't lose at this time of definitely for anyone who's paying attention, you know, especially if we have option four happen, gold and silver, incredible, great things to just stack some, you know. I think, of course, it's best to have it physically. I mean, paper, maybe if you're a trader and you trade futures and you have paper, silver, or gold, that's different. I think that's what that's really for. But for the individual, you want to have the actual physical asset in your hands. And then for me, it's just a sense of certainty. Because I don't know what the world's going to do. And it seems like most people live in a mainstream media haze, a delusional bubble. It doesn't matter if they're a Foxer or a CNN or MSNBC. Most people aren't really attached to reality. They don't really know what's going on. Like you mentioned, they don't know what BRICS is, you know? And so, I don't know, a way to I just think one of the best things you can do to protect your wealth, of course, how you can make money right now, that's a whole different story. But to protect wealth, it just seems like, I don't know how you beat gold and silver. I can't see it. What do you think?
I think that's fair. And to me, I'd even take it a step further and say gold and silver are wealth.
Yes.
They've been wealth for 5,000 years through everything the world's ever thrown its way. Two world wars, German hyperinflation, the Great Depression, every pandemic. And here we are 5,000 years after it's mentioned, I don't know, 400 or 500 times in the Bible, both of them are mentioned, silver a little bit less than gold, but the most well-informed traders in the world, the central banks, are buying it at a level the world's never seen. And they're using the suppression of the COMEX paper market to do it, and the LBMA. Give you an example of just how much suppression is out there. Let's just talk about the LBMA for a minute, the London Bullion Metals Association. They're trading right now nearly 3.5 times annual global mine supply every single day, which is about 3 billion ounces. They only have 300 million ounces available backing those bars, 10 times what they have available. In other words, there's 800 million ounces supposedly in the LBMA, of which 500 million belongs to the ETFs. It's encumbered. You can't touch it. That leaves them 300 million. They admit to trading 290 million ounces a day. But they say those numbers are 10 times understated because they only post the final settlement numbers, not all of the trades that were done to get to those numbers. If you're trading 3 billion ounces a day, 10 times annual global mine supply, yet you only have 300 million backing it, there's a problem. When you look at COMEX, it is rehypothecated. Each contract, meaning sold to other people, the same contract, over 1,500%. Rehypothecated. So 16 people or so have the same contract. If everyone tries to stand for delivery, one may get the silver, the rest get cash. That's like Bernie Madoff. It was a great business plan he had until people started redeeming, and then it got exposed for what it was, a scam. And that's what the West is. And we've seen rumblings out of the East that pay homage to this. The BRICS Grain Exchange was just formed, and they said, look, we produce more grain here in the global South than the people in the West do, yet we're not able to control the prices. It's all controlled on COMEX. The forming of this new BRICS Grain Exchange will change that. You have the head of the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which, by the way, over the past roughly 4 months has increased by over 200%, the volume. And it's made it now the second most widely traded heaviest volume exchange on the planet, surpassing the COMEX. But the head of, wow, of the Shanghai Gold Exchange said, look, when China is allowed to speak at the table, the real price of gold will be revealed. And they know what we are doing by suppressing the paper market, and they're using it against us by standing for delivery. These countries were never motivated or sophisticated or coordinated or wealthy enough to do that. Now they are. And this is how they are beating us, by draining the global exchanges of all of the commodities that you would need. You know, Bretton Woods I was after World War II. Bretton Woods II loosely would have been after Nixon closed the gold window. In Bretton Woods I, our dollar was backed by gold. Every country could exchange it for $35 an ounce. Give us $35, we'll give you an ounce of gold. And that was our currency was backed by gold. Bretton Woods II in 73, when Nixon struck the deal with the Saudis for exclusivity in oil pricing in dollars, well, that just ended when Saudi Arabia didn't re-up the exclusivity deal. And now they're selling oil in other currencies. So Bretton Woods III, as old Dan Pozar calls it, a very smart man, a system based on transparency and commodities. He or she who has the commodities wins. Yes. And that's what you're seeing, is all of these countries rush to buy commodities, the development of blockchain technology like Project Enbridge, which will be transparent to inspire confidence, and the commodities backing it using the immutability of a blockchain system and continual independent auditing to put an exclamation point behind that confidence. And we have squandered all of these things. We've squandered our trust. We've squandered our image. And we've squandered the world reserve status by inflating away the dollar. Here again, $100,000 per second. That just seems a tremendous amount of fiscal irresponsibility.
Mm. Yeah, and the new BRICS currency, or currencies as they're developed, do you think they're, well, I don't think they quite have the social credit score built in, even if that's something which exists in China. Do you think that the notion of the social credit score would be built into the new BRICS currencies?
I don't know, potentially. Yeah. I would like to hope not, because that's the first way to squander the trust. But whether it's full-out credit scores or just more along the lines of the ability to turn on and turn off, you didn't get your vaccination. What are you doing mm-hmm. at the gas station? The authorities will be called. Get in your car and go home. You can't buy the gas. Or, those kinds of things. You didn't pay your taxes or your child support. Your money has been drained from your account. Sorry, you'll have to wait till next month till you get your universal basic income ration. I mean, those are the kind of things that could happen. And it's funny, when Biden fast-tracked through executive order, the CBDC legislation, the number two economic advisor to the U.S. is a woman named Lael Brainard, and she helped develop it at MIT when she was at the Boston Fed. And there's a document that has floated around through the Freedom of Information Act that Nomi Prince got through the IRS, and she's published it. She's a very interesting best-selling author. I get to see her once a year at Rick Rule's conference down here in Boca. And in it, the IRS, which this was an internal memo that wasn't made for circulation, although she got it through the Freedom of Information Act, basically acknowledges that they say, look, we understand this isn't our intention, but we understand that this could happen, that you could freeze or cancel or put conditions upon people being able to access their money. And not only that, they've gone as far as saying, that the monetary policy of the Federal Reserve is really only limited to interest rates. Really, they can buy and sell treasuries. They're not allowed to do fiscal policy. But now you could, if it was a central bank digital currency where the central bank provides the money directly to the system, you could see a marriage between monetary and fiscal policy, where if they want inflation, well, they'll just give everyone money. And if they want to stimulate the economy, they could put a timestamp on it and say, you have 6 months to spend this money. It can't be on anything but retail, blah, blah, blah. Put conditions upon it. And it expires December 31st. So, if you don't use it, well, it's gone. And there were even things that were published that said, well, even though we don't intend to do this, we could cool things down by pulling money out of people's accounts, and which would be more deflationary. Any way you look at it, central bank digital currencies are coming. If you take the GDP of the world and the banks and the countries, rather, that make up 99% of the gross domestic product of the world, 99% of it, and all the countries that make it up, every one of them has a CBDC, central bank digital currency, either operational or in development. So it's coming. And unfortunately, you know, this is going to be hanging from a frame in the Smithsonian someday as an example of what was. I keep this as the first dollar bill, that I got in 34, almost 35 years ago. I keep it in a piece of plastic here because, you know, just to help me stay grounded and remind me where I came from. But it's coming. And even, you know, they're indoctrinating the kids. And my daughter, my youngest, will say, could I please have some money to go out with my friends tonight? And I'm like, here, you know, here's some cash. And I don't want, that's fake money. I want it in my Apple Pay. I'm like, well, then you better figure out a way to go out without any money, because I ain't giving it to you that way. I want them to at least understand the privilege of having cash. And it's just being, you know, vilified. And when Nancy Pelosi in 2020 said that virus could live on currency, I knew that was the beginning of the end for currency. And I hope I'm wrong, but it seems to me that is the pathway the world is heading.
Oh yeah. And if you look at the, you know, cultural programming and, you know, through the Ministry of Propaganda, you know, the intelligence agencies, the mainstream media, etc. Yes, I cannot tell you how many young people I know who think that CBDCs are the greatest thing ever, because for, you name it, many, many reasons. But one thing I'm not sure people are always aware of is that so much of that is already in place. If you look at every transaction, both national and international, the way it is tracked and the organizations, you know, conglomeration of banks that get together and create standards and such. So all of the tracking in the current financial system that we have, let's say in America alone, all the tracking, I mean, everything you do, it's phenomenal, you know, and it's all in the name of safety, fraud, blah, blah, blah. It's all this crap that they sell it as, but that's absolutely not true. Under the guise of safety, fraud, fairness, etc. I mean, people just don't know that when you swipe that card, I mean, it is like, it is analyzed everywhere you were, what you do, where it goes. It's insane. And also, so is the Bitcoin blockchain. It's totally mined as well. I mean, every transaction is, they will connect that to someone instantly, or they will in time. So we're already living in a time of all the foundation, which would be required for a social credit score. In my opinion, it's done. They just need to actually turn it on, and that's it. And so we're already there. It just ain't, they just haven't flipped that switch yet. So not a really positive thought, but just so people know, I mean, it's done.
If they didn't know. Well, I hope not, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit at all. And you can see how the powers that be would like that. And you want to talk about control. You know, I forgot who said it. Maybe it was JP Morgan. I forgot who said, you know, I don't care about the laws. Let me control the nation's money supply, something along those lines. Yeah. And when you control the money, you have all the power. It wouldn't surprise me one bit at all. Talk about getting people to do as you want. Well, you know, if they're not going to get the money to feed themselves or pay for anything, ain't going to happen.
Yeah. And Canada just pushed down some new, through FinTrack, some new regulations the banks have to hurry up and catch up with so that they're compliant. So I'd say it's even kind of worse in Canada. We're a little bit more rebellious here, but when Canadian government pushes it down, the banks just have to do it. And so they're ramping up the CBDC readiness, I guess you could say. So anyway, on a positive note, one of the great things you can do is if you own some gold and silver, just, you know what, you're going to feel better. And it's good for the mind, good for the soul, good for your family. It's like you're mentioning, it's wealth. You're taking, you know, fiat currency and buying wealth with it. You're basically gaining wealth. And there's even creative things people can do. We're actually here. We buy gold and silver, but we've been Poshmarking and eBaying all kinds of old stuff we don't need anymore, and just turn that into silver. Why not for people? There's an idea. Maybe you don't have a lot of money. You know what? What can you sell? What old stuff do you got? What old clothes you can sell on Poshmark? What can you sell on eBay, Facebook Marketplace? Start having a garage sale. Get rid of stuff. And you never know, you know, in the course of a couple months, you could have a couple grand in silver that you didn't know that you could just pull out of your closet or your butt or your garage. You know, it's possible. So
it's a great idea, actually. You know, we all have so much clutter and crap. It's a good idea.
It could be wealth.
It's kind of cathartic to do that.
Oh, it is. It is. You kind of, yeah, it is. It's very cathartic, you know, so you could kind of, you could sort of revisit a lot of your life and get rid of some of those relics and boom, you know, turn it into wealth. Trust me, I would say in your garage, in your basement, in your attic, your closets, there's more wealth than you might think. Just turn it, just once it becomes silver, it's wealth, you know, and it would have been a forgotten relic anyway. So get rid of it. So anyway, milesfranklin.com. That's where you can find.
Yeah, and for people who want our price list, mm-hmm. We don't post our really good prices. There are a lot of reasons, but the best way to do it would be to send an email to info@milesfranklin.com and ask for our price list or questions on IRAs or anything you've heard on this show, and we'll send it to you. It's as good or better than anywhere in the country. Far superior to the prices we list on our website, which we only allow for small purchases. Send us an email, no obligation, info@milesfranklin, Radiant creator sent me, and we will send it to you. Again, no obligation. If you want to be contacted, if you have questions, put your phone number down and we'll do so. But I think you'll see it's worth your time to send us that email. Prices will be as good as anywhere you'll find in the country.
Yeah, definitely. And so anyway, on that note, you know, thank you, Andy Schickman from Miles Franklin for being on today. You know, I hope people don't think this is too doomery because it really isn't. It's just the truth doesn't care what you think about it. It's indifferent. And right now, way too much of America is in a mainstream media, you know, cultural programming delusional bubble. And that's just my desire, is to get people into reality, the real one. And one of the nice grounding aspects of that is some metal will make you feel good. It'll make you smarter.
Yeah, man. Look, there's a fine line between realism and pessimism. And
yes,
like I said, I'd rather know what's coming, because if you don't, you can't even try and get out of the way of what you don't see coming. So let's hope I'm wrong. But one of these deals of being stuck in normalcy and recency biased is a problem, because at the end of any long lasting macro trend or cycle, that's evident. People have a hard time believing, could this really happen here? No way. But it can, and it appears that it's moving in that direction, that change is afoot. So hopefully I'm wrong. But again, anything that you buy in gold and silver, it's not to become wealthy, it is wealth. Yeah. And that's the most important thing. And that's our philosophy. We will direct you that way, not telling you how to get rich, but showing you how you can keep what you've obtained your entire life. So yeah, info@milesfranklin. Again, Craig, I'd love to come back anytime. Thanks for having me. I hope you and yours stay well. And remember the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. Next few months, I think, will be the most interesting of my career and probably of most of our lives. So buckle up. And if we can help in any way, or you'd like to pick up where we left off, you just let me know.
All right. Take care. And yes, from now to November, get ready. Take care. Bye.
See you, Craig. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, you too.